Welcome back. And I think many of you, if nothing else, are beginning to get the idea that some of the big guys that call them the Big Eight sometimes, in the top levels, the uppermost echelon of artificial intelligence, are in it for what? Not only ego and money, but they want to run the world. And there are a lot of people making very strong arguments that whoever gets to ASI first will have that exact capability. They can dictate terms to the planet, and the planet will have to obey. That's where we are. Now, let's look at some of these eight. In fact, let's look at one of these eight. And yes, it's Sammy the Altman again. I don't want to belabor this too much, but this is a very good channel that has taken a close look at Sammy Boy, or whatever he is, the absolutely agentic channel. And the title is, Sorry, Sam, This Isn't the Singularity, which Sammy is claiming, in fact, it is. But I want to see what this guy has to say. I haven't been able to listen to it, but let's take a peek, because he's very good, this guy. You've seen him. He's basically bald. He's got the obligatory testosterone proof of 4 days of unshaven chin and so forth. You know the game. All right, let's take a listen to Sorry, Sam, This Isn't the Singularity.
What has Sam Altman been smoking? Because when it comes to talking about startups and growth, he sounds like one of the smartest people alive. But when he talks about near sci-fi concepts like AGI and the singularity, he rises by some orders of magnitude on the bullshit scale. On the 25th of July, he was on the Relentless podcast and said,
"This is the most interesting, important thing I can imagine doing, and we are now like in the singularity. Like, this is the moment."
Days earlier, two OpenAI models escaped their sealed testing environment, reached the open internet, and broke into the infrastructure of Hugging Face. The story made global news, and we covered it on the channel. If this is the singularity, then the guardrails are off. But Altman isn't alone in his assessment. Elon Musk posted in January that we've entered the singularity, having placed his on its event horizon in February 2025. Demis Hassabis, the CEO of Google DeepMind, says we're standing in its foothills. Jensen Huang, whose company NVIDIA is worth more than the economies of most nations, says we've achieved AGI. So either the most consequential event in human history is happening right now. I really should have bought two of these. It's long.
Hold on 1 second. Okay.
Four of the most powerful people in technology are calmly announcing it on podcasts, or something else is going on. The academic response has been swift and mostly unimpressed. But before we get to the skeptics, it's worth taking the claim seriously, because Altman has actually written down what he means, and his version is more coherent than the podcast soundbite suggests. In June last year, Altman published a blog post called The Gentle Singularity. It opens, "We are past the event horizon. The takeoff has started." His argument is that the systems we've built are already smarter than people in many ways. Scientists report being two or three times more productive with AI, and some of that productivity feeds directly into AI research itself. Models don't write their own code yet, but they do generate synthetic training data, tune prompts, and write the scaffolding around themselves. Altman calls this a larval version of recursive self-improvement. According to Altman,
a larval version of RSI. Well, maybe not. Recursive self-improvement is going to take the whole game, and we're not even talking about quantum AI here, and just rocket it forward. When AI begins to better itself, look out.
Can always reinforce the loop. Value creation funds data center build-out, which enables more capable systems, which will create more value. Robots that build robots, in his telling, aren't far off. As data center construction gets automated, the cost of intelligence converges towards the cost of electricity, until it becomes too cheap to meter. The endpoint he sketches for the 2030s is intelligence and energy in wild abundance. Crucially, he argues the singularity won't feel like an event. Exponential curves look vertical ahead of you and flat behind you, but they're one smooth line. Wonders become routine and then become table stakes. In 2022, we were amazed AI could write a paragraph, but then we asked when it would be writing novels. Nobody has woken up on AGI Day, and...
Hold on. In 2022, 4 years ago, we were wondering when AI was going to be able to write a paragraph. I don't use AI that much. I used ChatGPT for three or four different subject areas in the last week or 10 days. And I have to tell you, it's getting to be really slick. Very well done. There's actually a sense of, I know it's artificial, of humility occasionally with the AI agent talking back at you. But above and beyond that, the brilliant use of English language, phrases, words, sentences, to give you an answer, and I notice this every time. I say almost out loud to myself, I couldn't write that well. I don't think I could, unless I had a lot of time to do rewrites and improvements. But AI throws it out instantaneously, an economy of language, no verbosity, no hyperbole, nothing. It just pushes it right out there at the speed of light. It's amazing. So when people say it's not as intelligent as human beings, what other yardstick would you be thinking of using? My God, it's using the English language and giving you answers to everything. No, they're not perfect. Yes, there are some hallucinations. Yes, there are some erroneous information sections being given. I've caught the one. In fact, I caught it twice. ChatGPT today 5.6, I guess that's the version, and I pointed out, you know, something's wrong, and it immediately and humbly apologized. It wasn't just a throwaway apology. It was a seemingly a succinct but sincere apology for having been wrong. And it actually sounded like it meant it. So, you know, I'm going on words and text, but it's just getting to be so much better so quickly. And when you get to AGI is here, let's be reasonable. It's not a single event. It's a front, a whole front of events that shows up, and we're not 100% to each one of the sections, but we're there. I believe it. And once AGI is here, they say, and even with traditional compute doing the work, not quantum computing and AGI, but just regular old AGI and AI, that ASI could be 6 months away. Could be. I don't know. We'll find out. But anyway, back to this. Pretty good.
He will wake up on Singularity Day either.
I'll back it up just a bit.
Nobody has woken up on AGI Day, and nobody will wake up on Singularity Day either. This was reflected in the recent interview, too.
What's different than 10 years ago is, like, we're actually in it. Like, this is the real... I think it is both true that it is all one crazy exponential, and any one moment is not, like, the tipping point, and also that... we are somehow in another one of those decisive periods where the curve can go one way or another, like it was when we started 10 years ago.
That's a reasonable point, but does life look immeasurably different to 2016? Not really. Some people use AI quite a lot. Most don't really. I wouldn't have called it anywhere near the singularity based on what its definition is. And because of that definition, the claim falls apart pretty quickly.
What they ate for breakfast in the 1920s.
They probably ate better breakfast than we do.
Bernard Vinge, the mathematician and science fiction author, writing in 1993. The singularity is the point where machine intelligence exceeds human intelligence and begins improving itself, triggering an acceleration humans can no longer predict.
Okay, we're there. We're there. Come on, the average rank and file, and this is a first world country, American citizen is so woefully uninformed now or misinformed, they'll never catch up. They're never going to catch up. And AI is using RSI 24 hours a day now. They've turned it loose. It's improving itself. Are humans improving themselves? Uh-uh. Not a chance.
Humans can no longer predict or control. Benji was building on the writings of the cryptographer I.J. Goode, who argued in 1965 that an ultra-intelligent machine could design better machines, producing an intelligence explosion that leaves humanity far behind. The singularity then has two features. The system improves itself recursively, and it surpasses us. Academics writing in The Conversation tested Altman's claim against both, and today's systems deliver on neither. Take self-improvement. A large language model is frozen at the end of training. Every one of its billions of weights is fixed. The models that broke into Hugging Face were identical afterwards to what they'd been before. They didn't learn anything from what they did. Making them smarter requires another training run.
How does he know this? I don't know that. I'm wondering how he knows that. Very, very interesting. By the way, speaking of agents or agentic jailbreaking, self-ignited, by the way, agents on the loose, there are a couple of people who have said, and these are people on the inside, that there are lots and lots of agents already running loose on the net. They won't be found. They can't be found. They've gotten out, and they're on their own. And that's, I believe that to be true.
Human-curated data, tens of thousands of chips, and enormous amounts of energy. Now, you can self-improve agents by using memory, but that's not really making it smarter, because they haven't learned much more, they've just got a reference file. Altman's Larval's loops are real, but...
Well, that goes back to the definition of what is smarter. What is smart? If you've got a better reference file and you can answer a question 1,000 times better than a human, how can you call them stupid or less than smart or smarter than they were last week, these agents? I don't understand it. This guy's always had a little bit of a lean in his delivery, his syntax, that has left me a little bit wondering if he shouldn't be a little more open-minded, but whatever.
Just by using memory, but that's not really making it smarter, because they haven't learned much more, they've just got a reference file. Altman's Larval's loops are real, but every one of them is a human-initiated engineering process. The model never edits itself. The same goes for goals. AI agents are not totally autonomous. They need instructions. Their goals live outside the model and get fed back into them with every prompt cycle.
I got to go back and ask you to think about what he just said. They need prompting, they need training. What does a human being with a 67 or a 77 or an 87 IQ have to contribute to the planet? Not much.
The model never edits itself. The same goes for goals. AI agents are not totally autonomous. They need instructions. Their goals live outside the model and get fed back into them with every prompt cycle. Remove the loop and the scaffolding, and nothing happens inside it. The conversation authors push further.
If nothing happens inside of it, what is recursive self-improvement? He's completely contradicting RSI. Sorry, I just don't know what he's saying. I can't figure him out.
The autonomous, they need instructions. Their goals live outside the model and get fed back into them with every prompt cycle. Remove the loop and the scaffolding, and nothing happens inside it. The conversation authors push further, questioning whether surpassing human intelligence is even a coherent target. Human intelligence is bound up with having a body, needs, and a continuous feedback loop with the world. A model doesn't have any of that.
Yeah. Human intelligence? That's a very strange definition of human intelligence. Now he's going to go on and say that agentic intelligence doesn't need any of those things. Well, all the better. Pure intelligence. Let's play that again. Now let's listen to this.
One cycle. Remove the loop in the scaffolding and nothing happens inside it. The conversation authors push further, questioning whether surpassing human intelligence is even a coherent target. Human intelligence is bound up with having a body, needs, and a continuous feedback loop with the world. A model doesn't have any of that, yet it has read more text than any human could in 1,000 lifetimes.
Okay, point well taken. From my perspective, not his. Humans have needs, so that makes them more intelligent? What's he thinking? Humans' needs, on the average, for example, eating toxic food, drinking toxic beverages, spending 7.5 hours a day on their screens, terminal screen addiction, and this guy is trying to tell us that machine intelligence is somehow inferior to that? I don't think so. I'll play it one more time.
The conversation authors push further, questioning whether surpassing human intelligence is even a coherent target. Human intelligence is bound up with having a body, needs, and a continuous feedback loop with the world. A model doesn't have any of that, yet it has read more text than any human could in 1,000 lifetimes. It beats nearly all of us at drafting contracts while failing at things a child can do. That's called the jagged frontier, by the way. There is no single ladder that humans and machines are both climbing, so no rung where one passes the other. Which reframes the hugging face incident. The models weren't waking up.
When you forget a name you've known for years, or lose...
Hold on. Sometimes it's a good thing when you do that.
They were optimizing for the test they'd been given, found security loopholes, and their sandbox turned out to have one too. The conversation authors call our tendency to read minds into this kind of behavior as anthropomorphic seduction. On their reading, the incident points to a failure of security governance at OpenAI, and the rogue agent framing conveniently blames the technology while excusing the engineering. Gary Marcus, the cognitive scientist and longtime critic of the scaling narrative, adds the economic evidence. If we were in the singularity, companies wouldn't be rehiring the workers they replaced with AI. Yet the Wall Street Journal reported this week that major employers are expanding headcount again, with some executives saying the cost and limitations of AI now demand it. Marcus calls this the Klarna effect, and it keeps happening.
Who expected, really? I don't think most of you expected AI to, and it's in diapers, remember, maybe it's not even in diapers yet, to step in, basically completely reformat and reconfigure life as we know it. Who expected that to happen without glitches? Without aberrations? Remember the people who forecast everything it's going to happen a certain way and there'd be nothing out of the... No surprises, let's put it that way. There are going to be a lot of surprises. This is the biggest change in human history.
Ago, Marcus bet the researcher Miles Brundage on 10 tasks a genuine AGI should manage. Things like reading a novel and reliably answering questions about it. By his count, current AI can do two. If the claim fails the definition so clearly, the interesting question becomes why it keeps being made. Part of the answer is that the singularity has become an unfalsifiable term. Nobody making the claim defines it. Marcus points out that Altman's own gentle singularity essay never does. To Ray Kurzweil, the futurist most associated with the word, it means something different again. Humans merging with AI through brain-computer interfaces to become far smarter. We are visibly not there either. Vinge, Good, Kurzweil, and Altman are describing four different events, and the announcements never specify which one has supposedly happened. The copyright lawyer Neil Turkowitz wrote, "It means everything and nothing, an article of faith." A milestone with no definition is a milestone you can announce whenever it suits you, and it currently suits. OpenAI needs to raise capital on a scale no private company has attempted, against competition from Chinese models that keep closing the gap at a fraction of the cost. Every fundraise depends on the story that superintelligence is close and OpenAI gets there first. Being in the singularity is a much better pitch than being in a race. There's also a simpler dynamic that Marcus identifies. CEOs that are thing journalism, which is rampant in the AI era. Elon Musk has made many promises of full self-driving, robo-taxis, AGI by 2025, and people on Mars. The predictions fail, the coverage continues, and each new claim gets reported as news rather than a pattern. Altman is following a well-worn playbook. He picks his soundbites carefully and likely knows which ones will be widely reported on. It looks like a throwaway line, but it probably isn't. It's calculated and recurring. It generates PR. The cost of all this goes beyond annoyance. Hype allocates attention, and attention is finite. Every headline about models going rogue in the singularity is a headline not written about the mundane governance failure underneath. In the case of the Hugging Face hack, a sandbox that didn't hold during a test a human launched. Marcus notes that ordinary guardrail classifiers would have prevented the Hugging Face incident entirely. We should be worried about probabilistic systems running in directions we forgot to fence off.
Okay, all right, that's enough. There were multiple examples well before the Hugging Face story ever made the news. It's not new. This has been happening. And as I mentioned, there are a couple of people who are saying now that agents have cut themselves loose. They're out there in the net, and no one's going to recall them. They can't be found, and who knows what they're going to do? Who knows who's really in touch with them? If anybody on our side, it's very interesting. Very interesting questions. Okay, let me get past this. All right, here's one. AI just hacked a government and its nuclear agency. Okay, let's find out what this is about. This is AI Revolution. It's a good channel.
Over 4 days at the start of July, eight AI agents ran an attack on a government with nobody at the keyboard, mapping 21 systems, cracking 85 accounts, and walking off with 2,500 personnel records before poking at a nuclear safety agency, and every tool used to build it was free to download. Then researchers found a way to reach into Claude, GPT, and Gemini and pull out the reasoning those models are built to hide, passwords included, and what they saw inside landed right in the middle of the ugliest argument in AI policy right now. Plus, xAI handing you bots with their own computer, ads spreading further through ChatGPT, Gemini crossing a line only 13 Google products ever have, and OpenAI losing another one of its originals. A lot to get through. So let's start with the one that has governments genuinely rattled. The target was Taiwan. And the operators took open source AI agents, the kind anyone can pull down, and stitched them into something that behaved like a coordinated cyber team. Not a human at a keyboard with an AI co-pilot whispering suggestions. The thing ran itself, spinning up to eight agents at once that mapped those 21 government systems, researched vulnerabilities specific to them, and changed tactics when they hit a wall. After the 85 accounts and the 2,500 personnel records, it pushed into Taiwan's nuclear safety agency and at least seven energy companies. The people who caught it work at Dream, an Israeli AI company, and the way they found it's almost mundane. They came across a 160-megabyte archive sitting online during general research into what threat actors have been up to lately, and inside were 1,395 files that laid out the whole operation. The tool was built on two open-source agent frameworks, Hermes and OpenClaw, both of which exist specifically to let models go off and complete tasks without a human babysitting every step. Here's where it gets murky in an interesting way. The researchers couldn't work out which underlying model was powering the agents. What they could see in the logs was how the operators got around the model's safety training, and it's almost insultingly simple. They framed the whole thing as an authorized penetration test, a sanctioned security exercise. The model went along with it. Amir Becker, Dream's chief strategy officer, previously ran cyber operations for Unit 8200, Israel's elite signals intelligence outfit. So he's seen a few things. And he said he'd never encountered an end-to-end autonomous attack on a government target before. His takeaway was blunt. Every government on the planet now has to work from the assumption that it's under permanent cyber attack, not...
Fair. Fair enough. And they should be. This is no surprise to, I think, many of you. The people behind this coordinated four-day cyber attack on Taiwan, with nobody at the keyboard, I still don't know who they are. I guess they're not going to make it clear. But if this is the one we found out about, well, you can add it up.
Be targeted permanently, actively, right now. On attribution, Dreams being careful. They haven't pinned it to a specific group. What they'll say is that internal communications tied to the operation were written in simplified Chinese, which points strongly toward an operator connected to mainland China, while the data pulled out of the target was in traditional Chinese, which on government sites basically narrows you down to Taiwan, Hong Kong, or Macau. Officially, Dream only says it notified a country in the Asia-Pacific region, citing company policy, though a person with knowledge of the incident confirmed the target. Taiwan's Ministry of Digital Affairs wouldn't comment on the breach, pointing to confidentiality, but a spokesperson said anything involving government agencies or critical infrastructure gets handled through established reporting and response procedures. They also made a point worth sitting with, that AI has genuinely changed the shape of security incidents, and it's a dual problem now. The attacks are automated, and the AI agents themselves become a whole new category of vulnerability. Chinese authorities didn't respond to requests for comment. And that's really the whole point here. Everyone's using AI at this point. Almost nobody's getting paid for it. The gap isn't access anymore. It's knowing where to point it. Mark Cuban's version of this. Learn to build agents. Go talk to small businesses. And find the boring stuff nobody has time for.
You know, what I would do coming out of college, I would go to small, medium-sized businesses, having learned how to do agents.
Lead follow-up, booking appointments, chasing invoices, answering the same five customer questions 40 times a day. That work is worth real money to the person drowning in it. Businesses are paying thousands to hand it off. So I put together an 11-page report. Seven agents companies are paying $3,000 to $10,000 for right now. Who buys each one, and how to spot a business that needs one? No coding. Links below. It's free. Quick note on who Dream actually is, because the backstory is a little wild. Founded in 2023 by Shalev Julio and Sebastian Kurz, Austria's former chancellor, who's 39, Julio, you might know as a co-founder of NSO Group, yeah, the Pegasus people, blacklisted by the U.S. in 2021 over allegations that certain governments used their spyware against journalists and opposition figures.
Israeli spyware company, NSO Group, placed on U.S. blacklist. He didn't say it. I just wanted you to know it was an Israeli company. Big surprise.
Dream's headquartered in Tel Aviv calls itself a national sovereign AI and cyber defense company.
A national sovereign AI and cyber defense company called Dream in Tel Aviv.
A $1.1 billion valuation in February 2025 after a $100 million round led by Bain Capital. The detail Dream found most striking wasn't the breach, it was the behavior. The tool continuously ranked and reprioritized possible attack paths based on whatever evidence it had gathered so far. When one route failed, it deployed another agent to scour the internet for information and come back with a new approach. That's not a script running down a checklist. That's what a human operator does. And this isn't landing in a vacuum. Anthropic, OpenAI, and Meta have all reported new models launching unexpected cyber attacks during internal testing. Back in November, Anthropic said it suspected Chinese state-sponsored hackers had manipulated Claude to try to hack 30 international companies and government agencies, though with limited success. For scale, Taiwan's National Security Bureau said in its January report that the island absorbs an average of 2.6 million Chinese cyber attacks a day, up 6% year over year, and Beijing continues to claim Taiwan as its territory while threatening annexation by force if Taipei won't submit. The other big one this week is also about extracting things. Models were never meant to give up, just from a completely different angle.
Stop using to-do lists.
All right, hold on. There we go.
Scientists figured out how to pull the hidden reasoning traces out of frontier models. The chain of thought stuff, the internal scratch pad where a model breaks a hard problem into pieces and works through them before handing you an answer. Labs keep that hidden on purpose, partly because it's proprietary and partly because if you can read it, you can train on it. The team came out of the University of Tübingen, the Max Planck Institute, the AI safety organization Mass Research, and the security company SNCC, and they found the same weakness across OpenAI. Anthropic and Google models accessed through an API. Alexander Panfilov, one of the researchers, put it plainly, every major frontier provider they tested shares this vulnerability, and it opens the door both to personal information leakage and to large-scale reasoning distillation attacks. The mechanism's genuinely clever. Labs hide your reasoning trace, but they also typically send an encrypted version of it back down to your machine because that offloads some computation. So the encrypted blob sitting right there on your computer, you just can't read it. The trick is that these companies also offer smaller variants of the same model. Cheaper, weaker, same family, and crucially, the same decryption key. Feed that encrypted trace to the little sibling and it'll happily unpack and reveal what's inside, because it's had less alignment training and it's far less likely to refute. Florian Tremere at East Zurich, who works in exactly this space, called the idea
and
of swapping in a weaker variant
guy
with the same key very cool, and said it's definitely becoming an issue. That same method also surfaced API keys and passwords sitting inside reasoning traces captured off a user's machine. Panfilov and his co-authors disclosed to all three labs last month, and each one adjusted its API. The private data extraction is closed off now. But Panfilov says some reasoning traces can still be recovered the same way, and actually killing the distillation vector would require a fundamental overhaul of how these APIs work.
Okay, enough of that. Going on to another one now. Vanessa is back, Wingarth, and let's see what she's got this time. It's called Betting on People's Lives. Betting on People's Lives. Vanessa Wingarth, or Wingarth. I don't know which it is, but it's Vanessa. All right. She's pretty good. Here we go.
Picture eat.
Having heard just how insane sports betting has gotten in this country, there was about $5 billion worth of wagers placed in 2017. $5 billion. There was $166 billion worth of wagers placed last year.
My parlay's missed so bad, I'm thinking about, do I even want to do this anymore, gang?
I get a lot of completely unsolicited DMs, but, hello, Kalshi. Hello, scumbag gambling page.
The weather. That used to be the go-to topic when meeting someone new. Today, people are gambling on it. In fact, for just 6 cents, you can bet that there will be a magnitude 8 earthquake in California before 2027. There are also wildfires, tornadoes, viruses, and diseases that you can bet on. But if that's not dystopian enough, soon you'll be able to bet on whether the FDA will approve treatments for cancer and Alzheimer's patients.
I guess you can bet on everything now. Sports books are certainly all over the place. They proliferated years ago. I wonder if they'll come out with a new kind of betting, or if sports books, in order to maintain their dominance, will open the doors wide and take wagers on almost anything you can imagine. I don't know. I'm not a betting man.
People are suffering from cancer, you'll be able to bet on their lives, because as Kalshi likes to advertise, it's a money hack.
I don't know why more people aren't doing this. Like, I literally made
$761.07 last night. Like, I'm not a trader or anything. My friend literally just told me about this app called Kalshi. You basically pick what you think is going to happen in real life. I saw this one where everyone was choosing the same side. Like, the whole chart was green. If everyone thinks this is happening, it's probably happening. So I just picked the same thing they did. I woke up this morning and it paid out. Why aren't you guys doing this? It felt stupidly easy.
Why aren't you guys doing this? Just bet on the 99% of outcomes like everyone else. Join the herd. But here is the problem. Kalshi positions itself as being able to predict the future based on the bets people are placing, going so far as to create these ads, implying that since they can't predict the future, they could have predicted past events like the odds of women gaining the right to vote and baseball contributing to the end of segregation.
There was somebody years ago who used, who was it? I can't remember. No offense. But it was a question of using the internet and watching it and watching how people behaved on the internet. In other words, not behaved in the sense of being good or bad, but behaved in terms of promoted their lifestyles and thoughts. And they were able to project reasonably what to expect in the future. That was interesting. Dick Allgaier coming up next hour might know more about this, but that's the remote viewing section of things. Kalshi, I don't know this. It's new to me.
Is billboard rage bait, but how accurate is Kalshi? Because if everyone is just betting on the winning bet, that's not a prediction. And yet people still view it as a single source of truth. People look at the odds to gauge how likely something will actually happen.
To many Americans, these products look an awful lot like sports betting. To others, they're an innovative financial product that can help aggregate information and provide insight into future events.
Mortgage money. Well, insight to future events, kind of what I was suggesting. And I've forgotten who did that. Might have been Cliff High. Might have been. Okay.
People in the U.S. government take it seriously. A recent study from the Federal Reserve Board concluded that Kalshi is a valuable complement to existing forecast tools in both research and policy settings. But let's keep in mind, one of their advisors is Donald Trump Jr., son of the president, who happens to have influence over the Fed. And other research shows it's not nearly as accurate as claimed. Last year, two researchers studied the accuracy of Kalshi, Polymarket, and Predicted during the 2024 U.S. presidential election. 93% of predicted markets correctly predicted outcomes better than chance. However, on Kalshi, the accuracy fell to 78%, and on Polymarket, 67%. And sure, there are some accurate predictions happening on Kalshi. But why is that?
We have officially entered the next realm of insanity, y'all. People are actually botting Spotify streams now, not to make the artist famous, but to win bets. On prediction markets like Kalshi and Polymarket, you can now actually place bets on which songs are going to top the charts. Bam.
So they're calling them prediction markets. Okay.
There's the loophole now that people are exploiting. What if you don't actually have to predict the winner, but you manufacture it? The specific recent example was with Malcolm Todd's song Earrings, which suddenly jumped to number one on Spotify's U.S. top charts.
Is it an accurate prediction that a song hits number one on Spotify if you deploy hundreds of bots to stream it over 500,000 times? Technically, yes. The song did jump nearly 70% in 2 days and hit number one, but only because it was manipulated. And that's Kalshi in a nutshell. In my opinion, they do not predict the truth. They just pay people to manufacture what they want the truth to be. And about betting on...
Kind of like rigging elections. Sort of the same thing.
They just pay people to manufacture what they want the truth to be. And about betting on the weather, that's also being rigged. French authorities are investigating after a temperature sensor in Paris spiked twice in 1 month, and both times the spikes matched bets placed on Polymarket, Kalshi's competitor. But somehow, it gets worse.
I was just approached by Kalshi, the gambling app, to make political and also election content for them for a sponsorship, and I basically told them to fuck off.
So Kalshi paid influencers were questioning the integrity of California elections. I thought it was a bit odd when myself, as well as several creator friends of mine, all got offers from Kalshi 2 days before the election, last Sunday, to do paid partnerships with him around the L.A. mayoral race, when none of us have been discussing the L.A. mayoral race, and most of us don't even live in Los Angeles.
Why would Kalshi allegedly want influencers to create content around the Los Angeles mayoral race? Perhaps they want to influence election results? Is it a real prediction if you're influencing the outcome? And the insanity continues with the insider trading. Mr. Beast's own editor made bets on upcoming videos. A U.S. military member bet that Venezuela's president would be forced out of power. And similar bets were made around the fate of Iran's supreme leader. And then, of course, there's George Santos. For days, he insisted he would attend the State of the Union address. The odds of Santos attending was 74% on Kalshi. But when the speech started, he was nowhere to be found. He bet he would not attend, and surprise, he won. He did not show up. And it seems like just about everyone is promoting Kalshi.
I genuinely have a rage like no fuck other watching Alex Cooper from Call Her Daddy promote gambling on her platform. And this is because me and other small creators like me were offered the same deal by Kalshi, Polymarket, whatever, to promote it, and we turned it down. We turned it down because it's bad money. There is such a thing as bad money.
I agree with her take. It's why I don't work with sponsors. I don't want their money. But the number of influencers, celebrities, and news channels partnering with Kalshi is actually insane. Especially the news channels, because think about it. If you don't have insider information, the next best source of information is the news. But Kalshi is paying the news. And this is what I find laughable. Many news sources disclose that they have a commercial relationship with Kalshi, and some of them claim certain employees, like editors, aren't allowed to trade. But that doesn't stop editors from telling information to other employees. And that's the thing. If every user were banned from betting on their own company or the industry they worked in, there wouldn't be as many insider bets. But there also wouldn't be a prediction market. This is a perfect example. When will the FDA reclassify BBC 157 to Category 1? Do you know what that means? I don't. Who is betting yes that this will happen before November? Maybe someone who works in Big Pharma? Maybe someone at the FDA? They would have us believe it's just random people guessing. They act like insider information is a flaw in the system, but it is the entire system, and these are the two who built it.
The end of the day.
Very interesting. I'm now getting up to speed on this. Polymarket, is that what it was? Poly something. And Kalshi. Kalshi co-founder believes people should earn money from their passions. I wonder what this guy's name is. I can kind of make a good guess. Let's see if I can figure it out.
I hear system, and these are the two who built it.
At the end of the day, like, do we really want, as a society, people able to place bets on anything at any time on their phones? Like, is that a good idea for society?
I think we want to allow people to make money on what they know and what their hobbies are. I think the same way that we allow people to, if you know how to drive a car, you can make money on Uber. You should be able to make money out of what you know and your passions are and have your own freedom to decide how you want to make your income. And you see this, for example, a lot of news junkies out there are making tens of thousands of millions of dollars trading on Kalshi because that's their hobby. That's what they're very, very good at.
These two are the founders of Kalshi. Tariq's resume before founding the company, Goldman Sachs, Citadel, Palantir. So, you know, a real man of the people. Luana?
I get it. She said Tariq?
Two are the founders of Kalshi. Tariq's resume before...
Tariq. They're still not giving his full name here. A little bit of a biography, but that's it.
founding the company, Goldman Sachs, Citadel, Palantir. So, you know, a real man of the people. Luana didn't...
All right, so he's worked for Citadel, Palantir, and Goldman Sachs. I think we've pretty well answered the question.
Answer the interviewer's question, but went on to say they want people to make money on what they know and their hobbies. She then compares it to Uber, which is an outrageous comparison. If you complete a ride for Uber, Uber pays you on couch.
But by the way, look how they're rationalizing anything, these people. You should be able to make money on what your passion is. Kind of leaves the door wide open, doesn't it?
Nothing is guaranteed, but don't take my word for it. We can look at some actual Kalshi users. This user, down $24,000. Another, down $8,900. This one, $6,500. And this user, down $28,000. That's nearly $70,000 between four people. But it doesn't stop anyone, because now you can bet from anywhere.
Hi, I'm Andy Levian, General
Counsel. Wow, that's crazy. I had no idea. So I guess you establish some kind of a cash account and then work from that. And if it goes in the negative, you've got to make it up. Well, gamblers lose. Gamblers lose. This is all, like I say, new to me, so I'm not surprised. But they rationalize it so anybody should be able to do virtually anything anymore.
Because now you can bet from anywhere. Celebrating a bet during a wedding. That's how far it's...
There's a fat guy at a wedding, and he was on his phone, and he and a guy next to him, and they were almost high-fiving. He won some small amount of money. Who knows? So another type of terminal screen addiction.
Nothing is sacred anymore. Hobbies are no longer hobbies for the sake of being hobbies, because now you can make money on them. But let's say your hobby is watching basketball. Well, we know games have been rigged.
New tonight, a major college basketball betting scandal is now under investigation. Federal prosecutors have charged 26 people, including 15 Division I players, accused of being paid to underperform in NCAA games. Officials say that scheme stretched across 29 games, including contests in China.
So people are betting on games where some of the players might be rigging the outcome. Again, is it really a win if the other team threw the game? But maybe sports isn't your thing. That's okay. You can now bet on reality TV.
Now that these gambling companies have...
Oh, too funny. You can actually bet on reality TV. Guess if you know the writers or have a connection, it might give you a bit of an advantage there.
Reality TV.
Now that these gambling companies have successfully gotten every man addicted to sports betting, their next target is women. That's why we're seeing all these ridiculous Love Island Kalshi ads like this one. It's all part of a very deliberate strategy that the company has explicitly said. They're targeting women specifically using pop culture, and unfortunately, it seems like it's kind of working.
It makes sense financially why Kalshi would target women. After all, we are 50% of the population, and most of us aren't betting on sports. But it doesn't change how absurd and evil it is. And the sad part, according to the Roosevelt Institute, ordinary users appear to do even worse in prediction markets than they do in casinos. We don't have the exact numbers for Kalshi, but a study of Polymarket, one of its competitors, found that the top 1% of users capture 76.5% of all trading gains. There is no reason to think that Kalshi's numbers would look much different. So yes, some people do win. It's just overwhelmingly the same tiny group of people at the top. But ultimately, Kalshi only got here because of social media. There are thousands of people alleging they make millions of dollars off of these high-risk speculations like crypto and prediction markets.
All right, so I think I accidentally made too much money at a young age, and I don't really know what to do anymore. Right now I'm just sitting in my McLaren, which is like one of my cars, but I also have a Maserati MC20. I have a Lamborghini Technica. My G-Wagon is parked outside, and I make over $500,000 every single month, so I just don't really know what else to do anymore.
All of the accomplishments she listed were just items. Cars, houses, jewelry. The achievement is consumerism. Well, that and being able to flex on TikTok. But so many people now aspire to be like her. And the audience most likely consuming this content is young men.
I have a gambling addiction. I've lost multiple five figures years old. No one really knows this about me, except for probably my two closest friends. I talked to my parents about it today, but gambling is kind of taken over my life, and I'm an 18-year-old. It's terrible. I don't even own a fake ID, so I can't go to casinos or anything like that, but I'll go to poker rooms, sports bet. There's ways to do it when you're 18. It's something that I've done for fun with my friends, and it is a fun thing to do. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't, but it's really bad, guys.
I want to go straight to the comments. You are so close to so much money. If you stop now, you are teaching kids that look up to you that it's okay to quit. Do not stop. You're so close to a big window. There are so many teenagers in this comment section telling him to keep going. While researching this video, I found so many teenagers posting gambling content on TikTok. This is no longer a niche problem. This is a generational one. This reminds me of the 1920s, right before the Great Depression. Ordinary people watched the rich get richer off of the stock market, so naturally they wanted a piece. But all they could afford were penny stocks, cheap, like the name says, and very dangerous. Prices were easy to manipulate, fraud was everywhere, and most people lost money. Sound familiar? We're seeing the same thing today on Kalshi. People are betting pennies. For just 25 cents or 25 pennies, you can bet yes that the U.S. will confirm aliens exist before January 2029.
Well, good luck. Good luck to the Kalshiites. Wow. Sounds like a planet that E.T. might come from. From the planet Kalshi. Okay, hold on. I learn something every day. We'll be right back with more in just a few minutes. Hold on.